Does it ever feel like you're a marketing professional just
speaking into the void?
Well, with LinkedIn ads, you can know you're reaching the right decision makers. You can even target buyers by job title, industry, company, seniority, skills. Wait, did I say job title yet? Get started today and see how you can avoid the void and reach the right buyers with LinkedIn ads. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next campaign. Get started at linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply.
This is the way it feels to move through summer in Lululemon. Iconic align softness without the front seam. For our smoothest look and feel ever, summer won't know what hit it. Stretch your limits in the non-stop flexibility of the new Lululemon Align No Line Pant in select stores and at lululemon.com.
Hi everyone, welcome to the Tech Entrepreneur on a Mission podcast. My name is Ton Dobbe and I'm the founder of Value Inspiration and the author of The Remarkable Effect. I envision a world where every B2B SaaS startup succeeds because they're creating software that customers would miss if they were gone. And here's why. Research consistently shows that 90% of all startups fail, and that's bad. What's worse, however, is that 75% of SaaS scale-ups fail, companies that are supposed to have product market fit. Far too few scale-ups create the traction they aspire for and fail for the wrong reasons. And I believe this should stop. And hence I created my business. And the goal that I have with this podcast is twofold. First, to inspire new forms of value creation by sharing compelling ideas and stories about the potential that we can unlock when technology and people blend in the right way. Secondly, share experiences from tech entrepreneurs like you about what it requires to create a remarkable software business and how to overcome the roadblocks to do so. The guest on my podcast this week is Bridget Harris, co-founder and CEO of You Can Book Me.
Feature bloat is real. You can say, let's be really generous about our free tool and have loads of features in the free tool. All you're doing is confusing free users who need a really simple tool and they don't want to think because they're not paying for the software. So they just literally want it to work. So if you have a problem that your free users can't contact support, it means that your free tool is more complicated than it needs to be.
This is Bridget. She had three distinct careers, showcasing her versatility and adaptability. She started in the television and film industry, then transitioned to politics, serving as a political advisor, focusing on constitutional reform and the House of Lords. Her political career culminated in a role as an advisor to the UK Deputy Prime Minister. Finally, she co-founded You Can Book Me, where she now serves as a CEO. Their mission? To provide the best booking experience for businesses' clients and customers. And under Bridget's leadership, You Can Book Me has achieved impressive growth. The company has reached well over $5 million in annual recurring revenue without external funding. And that route was a deliberate one. She decided from day one to avoid external funding that might have distorted business priorities, saying, I'd rather make $1 million slowly than lose $1 million fast. And this inspired me, and hence I invited Bridget to my podcast. We explore her bootstrapping journey over the past 12 years. She shares how she's successfully competing in a saturated market against well-funded competitors and tech giants like Google and Calendly. She elaborates on how she's maintaining a customer-centric approach while managing limited resources. Last but not least, she shares insights on how she overcame the challenges of pricing, overcoming feature bloat, refactoring legacy code, and adapting to market change. And by listening to this podcast, you will learn four things. Firstly, how she's aligning her entire team so they can deliver on time and grow an eagerness to go above and beyond. Secondly, what she's learned from refactoring their pricing approach and the lessons that nobody is talking about. Thirdly, how to avoid feature bloat in your development process. And lastly, what she's doing differently to create the best customer experience. Well, hi, Bridget. Thank you for making the time available today and being the guest on the podcast.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, well, I mean, we shortly met at SaaS Talk last year. And that's from that moment I started following you. And I've been impressed with what you've been doing with the company. I prepared
Thank
a little
you.
Bit better.
That was the bootstrap stage, wasn't it? And what an array of amazing bootstrap companies you were introducing to us for those couple of days at SaaSDoc. And it's so impressive and always inspiring to be around other bootstrap companies, people who are championing bootstrap companies, and people who are building businesses the way they want to build them.
Exactly. That's the right wording for it. Building business the way they want to build it without being interfered or having to get permission from someone else.
Right.
Well, we're going to talk about your bootstrap journey, which has been a very interesting one, 12 years down the road. Mm. But before we start talking about your company, You Can Book Me. I also love the title. I mean, how clear can it get? What drives you? What do you get energy from as an entrepreneur?
That's a really good question. I do have a lot of energy, actually. So I'm probably, battery operated most of the time. I don't need anything to drive me. I just have energy to do stuff. However, I do think that I genuinely love improving things, changing things, making them better, regardless of what it is. So working inside software for the last 12 years, I've been doing it inside You Can Book Me, but I've had previous careers as well where I'm just interested in making systems better. And I think that if that energizes you, you then have to look at what you're good at. And what I'm good at is making decisions based on those systems. So if you think this is a bad system, or we could improve it this way, or this is inefficient, we should do this. It's how well you're confident about making that decision that really matters. So I'm really driven by improving systems, and I'm really good at making decisions. I think that probably sums me up. But you can ask my friends and relations and see whether they would agree.
Well, I mean, from following you also on LinkedIn, I can sort of see a theme there as well. So that's I trust you. And I mean,
who I say I am on the tin and LinkedIn. You know, my LinkedIn posts do come from me. I don't write about things on LinkedIn that I'm not, interested in and confident about talking about. I think there has to be some kind of level of authenticity. And actually, that's, I enjoy being on LinkedIn because I enjoy talking about the things that I would like other people to understand that I didn't understand 12 years ago. So hopefully to improve their decision making so that they don't make the same mistakes.
Exactly. Well, that's also why I'm there. Yeah, it's giving back, inspiring people to kind of think about things a little different.
Yes.
If that's helping one person, I've achieved my goal for the day.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's a wonderful thing. The internet, we should continually celebrate it, because when we were starting You Can Book Me, there was two problems. The first is I didn't know I should have reached out more for help. So I didn't understand the impact and how transformational a difference a network can make, mentoring, coaching, people who are supporting you. I just didn't. We did it alone. And we shouldn't have done. But then also, we were one of those very early stage startups in a bootstrap world in the UK where there weren't very many companies like us at all. So we were doing a lot of inventing the wheel genuinely for the first time. And it just meant, we probably added an extra 5 years on our company's learning curve that we didn't need to if we had just made better decisions earlier on, if we just known more. And I do feel like we're never going to get that time back for us, but I can definitely save that time for other people.
Yeah, exactly. I've got a couple of questions around that in a minute. But kind of winding back the clock, 2012, October, you started the company.
Well, not strict. That's when I took on the full-time job as CEO. So it was a bit more complicated than that.
All right. But before that, my history and my resources tell me that you actually started the business with your
co-founder, husband,
Keith. That you did two startups before that that didn't make it. One had no customers, the other had
no
users,
money,
but no one was paying.
That's right. They've been doing their homework, watching other interviews. Yeah. So they weren't exactly startups. They were products. We launched two. I like to say that You Can Book Me is the 10th product that we launched that was commercially successful. So we are bang on the 9 out of 10 products fail and 1 out of 10 succeed. So we built a lot of products. Keith, as a software developer, built a lot of web applications. And the first one that had no customers and no money was in 2003. So that was more than 20 years ago. that was called TickBoxer, which was a survey building tool. And then we built 5 years later, When Is Good, which is still going to this day, which does a find a time for a group of people to meet. So it's called a consensus scheduler, but it's a bit like Doodle. Yeah. When Is Good has thousands, I say they as if it's a different company, but When Is Good still has to this day thousands of users. So we have plenty of people who love using When Is Good, but we have no customers from it. And then You Can Book Me, we hit the jackpot. We got users plus customers, which is the only way you can build a business.
Exactly. I got plenty of questions around that part as well. But so what was the big idea behind starting You Can Book Me? What was the problem that was screaming for a solution? Let's start there.
So this was about scheduling, finding a time for people to meet. And You Can Book Me is actually the fourth scheduling tool that Keith has been involved in building.
Wow.
So essentially, it's a kind of an age-old problem, finding a time for people to meet. But when do they want to meet? Why? What's the context? Are they paying for it? Is it a group? Is it individuals? These are all of the questions. Yeah. And different products do slightly different jobs. So When Is Good does this job of finding time for a group of people to meet. You Can Book Me primarily solves the problem of businesses selling services and time to other people. I mean, we have a lot of education using it as well. But again, it's part of a bigger picture where you've got organizations and businesses who are needing, for whatever, however you describe them, students, clients, customers, who need to book time. So You Can Book Me is the fourth, is the two other tools that Keith also wrote was, he wrote one called Sign Up Sheet, which was about courses and classes. And he also wrote one years ago called Dance Card, which was about when you go to conferences like the ones you and I go to, trying to figure out who you should be networking with and meeting and finding a time during the conference. So the thing is, it's like going into farming, you know, like what kind of farming are you going to do? It's not actually scheduling. There are hundreds of different kinds of use cases for scheduling. So the job is not to try to build a tool that rules them all. The job is to try to build a tool that just, you know, solves that one specific problem for your most best case scenario customers.
Let me make a small interruption here. Bridget just made an excellent remark that allows her company to own a good part of the market. Solve one specific, valuable problem for a specific customer in a way that exceeds expectations. It's a trait remarkable SaaS companies master. They acknowledge that they cannot please everyone. Then they offer something valuable and desirable to some. And then they aim to be different, not better. And you can master these traits as well. The first step? Simply read my book. I've made the electronic version available for free. Just visit theremarkableeffect.com to grab your copy, and inspiration will spark within 10 minutes. Back to the interview.
Yeah, I mean, we all know these tools these days, and it's very interesting to hear that you've been pioneering this space from the very early days. I actually don't know. I can't remember any tool in that space from before that time.
Doodle was around. Exactly. There were other tools, actually. One of the kind of hidden success stories of You Can Book Me, even though we're obviously not as big as some of our competitors now, we did survive many years when other appointment scheduling services did not. So there was a service called Tungle that did booking, and they were acquired. Basically, it was an acqui-hire by BlackBerry. Doodle 10, 15 years ago did also have a booking component that they then sunsetted at some point. I think they've brought it back now, but they sunsetted it. And then, of course, the big beast of appointment scheduling, Google Appointments, came out in 2012. So when we were launching You Can Book Me, in the first version of You Can Book Me went out in 2011, and then we kind of went for broke in 2012.
Yeah.
Google Appointments came out. And so everybody thought, well, if you can get free booking off your Google Calendar from Google, why would you pay for a service? So we've always been up against, and there's plenty more tools that have come and gone. And I think it's because people just think, how hard can that be? You know, just throw up a booking page, integrate it with Google Calendar, you know, Bob's your uncle. And to an extent, you are right. And that's exactly what you get from Microsoft or from Google if you want to get a little booking interface. But that's not really what we do. What we're managing is people's rules, their preferences, their customization, their languages, their payments, their services, their calendars. And as a service, we are also, our infrastructure is non-trivial. So we handle interactions with millions of calendars every day. So we have to have very robust engineering, very robust infrastructure. So it's easy to get it wrong, essentially. It's easy to start a scheduling company, but it's very easy to get it wrong. And so I think one of our major success points here, Ton, is that we've not failed.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, that's why I like the example, because everybody thinks, okay, it's a horizontal thing, you know, just launch it and everybody should be able to buy it. But it's not what it's all about because of the rules.
Yeah.
I mean, my rules are different from your rules and they're different from anybody else's.
Yeah. And so it's how you customize those rules. So what we do, what we have, what we specialize in is that we want You Can Book Me to be the easiest booking experience for people. The customization is, so this is what can kill a scheduling tool as well as make it successful, is that lots of small businesses, they want this translated, they want that changed, they want this to look exactly like it, they want this booking experience to be exactly like this for their bookers. So we have built a really robust tool that does all of that. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing the kind of very specific things people say, that's what I want, and they will pay for it. That's what we've discovered.
Exactly. Not really well. And I think the essence here is that it's not for them, it's for their customers. It's the experience that their customers get from it.
Exactly.
And that's what you want that to be good.
We have the best booking experience for your clients. That's basically what we're saying. So if you care about your customer experience, booking you, and here's a really good example. It took us years to do this because of we went the wrong way around our architecture and infrastructure, but we brought this out last year finally, which is that if you go to my You Can Book Me page, bridget.youcanbook.me, not only if you have a You Can Book Me page, you would be able to connect the two availabilities easily. Mm-hmm. You could also overlay your calendar. So if you're just an online calendar user, you could overlay your calendar times and you would see when you're free. If you are a Calendly user, you can log in via Calendly and you can see the times when you are free. So we believe that a booking experience for somebody booking you when they are free is just as important as when you are free. So we always had this sort of one-way thing, which is this is my scheduling tool. And it drives me crazy. People send me links to say, feel free to grab some time on my calendar.
Yeah.
Who does that? Who does that? Shopkeepers on the high street don't sort of say, feel free to basically work out what I'm selling and then, you know, let me know what you want to buy. It's like, welcome, come into the shop, have a look at what we've got. And it's always, you are serving the customer. And so for us, the bookers are the customers ultimately. So we say, if you come to a You Can Book Me page, you should be able to share your availability with a You Can Book Me booking page so that you can then choose the best time, because that's... Yeah. That's the problem we're trying to solve.
Exactly. Because at the end, it's about your time availability and whether my will fit with that yes or no. Exactly.
Exactly. Exactly.
Fun. Big problem in all kind of stages. Starting in 12, you became the CEO of the company. You decided to run it bootstrapped. What was being an early decision that appeared to be extremely important for where you are today? Or the success that you were seeing today?
An early decision that then turned out to be a very consequential decision.
Yeah.
Well, this is just about building a company rather than the product itself. But I think we chose very early on to be a remote company, very early. So we have a company headquarters in Bedford, but that's just really for our operations and logistics. It isn't there really designed for anybody other than our operations team to work out of. And I think that's been consequential because it opened up our ability to employ people. Long term, we employ people in Spain and Portugal and France and Germany and in America. And so I think it changed our outlook from being a British company that had a British headquarters and then we'd only employ people who lived in Britain to work for us.
Yeah.
It immediately catapulted us into this international remote company, software company. And I think that changed us from every aspect, the way we are, the way we think as a company. I mean, actually, this photograph behind me, this is our actual office. So we do have a very nice office. But I think being a remote company is not for everybody. Some people don't like working remote. It's not like there's not a right or wrong. But for us, it's allowed us to build a company over 12 years in the way we wanted to do it. And we bootstrapped it as well, with no pressure to try to build a physical version of that company in the form of an office.
No, exactly. Very well. Way ahead of your time. Yeah. When everybody kind of starts learning what remote was all about during COVID, you've been there for what is it?
Well, we didn't miss a beat. Yeah, we didn't miss a beat in COVID. No.
I can imagine. That's been a huge advantage. So this drive to keep bootstrapping the business and to grow it from there. What has been, I mean, have you had any moment where it became tough, where you were at a crossroad? And how did you solve it then?
Yes, many times. We borrowed money at various times. We've borrowed money, private loans and bank loans. Plenty of times when we're worried we're going to run out of cash.
Yeah.
So cash management is really the number one skill you need as a founder if you're going to bootstrap your company over a few. I mean, you literally just have to watch cash like a hawk and don't spend it if you can help it.
Yeah.
So that's always led to, you know, that's stressful. I think that the most stressful times, though, have always been when the service has let customers down. So, you know, if you have a situation where Google Calendar goes down and then you're struggling, you're on the back foot to try to figure something out and people are screaming because their booking pages don't work. Those are the times when you're really at the coalface of a business relationship with customers. You've taken money from them. For whatever reason, your service is not working. You know, there's nobody to go crying to. It's not like, you know, I think that we do live in these VC-funded companies where somebody's got 3-4 million turnover, but they've been given £30 million cash, and they're telling themselves they're a £150 million company. But at the end of the day, they're only bringing in 3 or 4 million a year. It's no more than us, you know, 5 million a year, whatever it is. And so it's really the money that you're getting from those customers that actually matters and what your relationship with them is like and what you're doing. And I find that is kind of, that's what keeps you going, because you have an obligation to those customers. And if you're committed and you want to do a good service, but it's also stressful when, you know, you've let them down and they're unhappy. So I think that the really hard times have been when you're really desperately trying to serve customers, and for whatever reason, because of the constraints of the resources, like, you know, doing support tickets at 2 o'clock in the morning or something, or the actual engineering is letting people down. It's really tough because there's nowhere to go to. You can't just say, do you know what? It's 5 o'clock. It's the end of my day. I'm going now. You realize that if you're a founder and you're in that situation, that's a 24-hour job until you've put to bed, you know, whatever the issue is. And we've had a very significant change in our software pricing in the last couple of weeks. And it was amazing because the difference 10 years later, not just because of the size of our team and the experience of our team, but also that we've been around for 12 years. So we really know how to do a software rollout properly, you know. And I was telling the team, you know, when we make this change, the gears are going to grind. You can't make a consequential change like the one we have just done without there being a few hiccups. Like on one day, we didn't, people weren't able to upgrade. You know, there was sort of things like that happening. People couldn't change plans, but we got it all sorted. And, but it was calm and it was well planned out and everybody knew their job and the team communication was excellent. And you can just see the experience of our team now that's seen a number of these firefights or things going on. And this kind of experience of when you're trying to do a rollout, do you keep going forward or do you roll back? Or, you know, how much turbulence are you going to cause? Is it acceptable to cause a certain amount of turbulence to the customers on that day because the next day it's going to be better, whatever it is? So you're in this kind of very, very sort of immediate, visceral job of working on your product, your software with your team that you have taken money from customers and you're about to change something about the way they experience that software. And I don't like firefighting. I don't like stress. I don't like stress. I don't like things being stressful if they don't have to be. We're not you know, we're not an aid organization going into a humanitarian crisis. Like, this is a software company. We should be able to organize things reasonably well. I don't like panic. But I think years ago, we had, it's almost like you don't, you know, the picture that you're operating in hasn't been as clear as it is now. Like, so 10 years ago, it was a lot more foggy for me. I just didn't know all of the things that we should have known then, like testing. Testing is a really good one, like test your software. Really significantly test your, for anything significant, test your software. So now, 10 years later, we've got a lot of that. And we'll, there'll still be more things that we will then have to face. But I feel like the most stressful thing a founder has to deal with is an angry customer, in my view. And I will, you know, try to do anything to avoid that.
Have you, well, from the lessons that you've learned over the last 12 years or more, what has changed from then to now when it comes to kind of avoiding that or being at least better prepared for that? Have you got any frameworks for that or?
Planning. So a couple of years ago, we started to focus much more on our 12-monthly roadmap and our quarterly planning. So we are now into the fifth quarter of quarterly planning. So we started it last June. And obviously that started previously. So the planning starts to be that every 3 months we know exactly what we're going to roll out and we can communicate it. And there's a huge amount of certainty there for the customer team to say to a customer, this is what we're going to build and this is what we're going to do. And the planning for the following quarter starts in the middle of the, so we're in the middle of our current quarter. So we'll start our planning for the next, the autumn quarter now. And I've, you know, a planning can often be either boring or admin or administrative or dismissed or lots of meetings or it doesn't go anywhere or, you know, you can't just start having planning meetings. So we started a couple of years ago with, we set out our product vision. We said, this is what we wanted to build in the next 10 years. This is where we want EconBookMe to go. And these are all the key issues that we need to fix before we get there. So pricing being one of them. And then working on our data and our ICPs as well. So we essentially, before we started to do quarterly planning, where we're telling everybody we're hitting our rocks and our deadlines every quarter, we educated the whole team about why and what and for whom, so that everybody understands the motivation, everybody understands the mission. And so now, as a result, the whole company is aligned to what we're trying to achieve. And then the planning kicks in because they all want to know. And it's really great because what, you, if you have a really good quarter where you've done exactly what you said you were going to do, the team then are like, "Oh, what are we doing next quarter?"
Yeah,
exactly. Because they're suddenly in this world where they're delivering, and they're delivering on time, and that makes a massive difference.
Exactly. Yeah, I saw from my research about you that one of your skills is, well, your biggest lesson learned is the importance of strong people management skills and enabling employees to perform at incredibly high levels.
Oh, right.
Has that got to do with it?
Yeah, no, I mean, that's exactly. So yeah, I'm not the one telling everybody what to do. So you enable high performing individuals to do what they're very good at doing by giving them certainty around what they're being asked to do. So you can't, so if you have lots of really good people, but they're just all over the place and you have different agendas, people think you're trying to achieve a different thing. And that's okay. You know, that happened, like it's cyclical almost. Like, and you can book me, there's been times when we've been all together really hard, you know, brilliant core team, and we've been working brilliantly together. And then things happen. You hire more people, things drift a bit. You make, you know, the odd wrong turn left or right. And suddenly you lose your course. It's just exactly the same. I've just been on a sailing ship, Tom, for the last week, and I was helming the ship. And it's amazing just to stay on course, just to stay heading towards the horizon, the number of times of the turns of the steering wheel, I don't know what it's called. I should have learned the term. Yeah. But basically you're affecting the rudder, aren't you? Course correction. Yeah. So it's amazing how often you have to do course correction simply to keep the ship going in the same direction with everybody on board. And that's exactly what it's like to run a company. And so if, I don't know, things in my life have changed and I've got distracted for a couple of years, we lose course correction, then half the team is going off in an entirely different direction.
Exactly.
And that's happened more than once to us as a company. So it's kind of like, oh, that's happened. We need to get back on course. You know, it's not an unusual thing to happen.
Your own plans are your own plans, but then there is the outside, the mean outside world,
right?
The economy, the regulations.
Well, I mean, that's it. I mean, exactly. So one of our distractions was COVID. We got completely distracted by the reaction to COVID, you know, and then you get distractions about, I don't know, product development that people want. We've had to do some very, very significant, but quite frankly, quite boring refactoring. You know, it's not fun to refactor 12-year-old software. That's why you don't do it. And then finally, you're like, oh, man, we can't build any more features until we refactored this software. So that all got done. So we've had some great progress over the last couple of years, but it hasn't been necessarily aligned to a product vision. It's been more to do with, you know, keeping the whole project alive. Yeah. So, but getting the team understanding where they could go, like if you're on that course, you're sailing that ship and you're saying to everybody, that's the horizon and that's where we're heading. It's amazing how quickly everybody aligns. And then you get these high performing individuals to they make really good decisions. And I don't have to do as much in my job because people report in and they say, Bridget, this has happened. This is what I think is going to be affected by it. This is what I think we should do. And, you know, I've checked with this person and that person, we're all happy. So I like, oh, great, tick. You know, that's what amazing management turns into when you have really good people. I stop having to do anything.
Yeah, and I like that you point out also how the alignment across department is important. They're following, like, what the North Star is. And if you don't have that North Star, whatever that, the point about it is, you become steerless.
Right.
Have you seen an improvement in resourcefulness of the business that you can actually start to do more with less people?
Yeah. Yes. So in the last 12 months, our team size has reduced off the top of my head by about 10%, but we have doubled the amount of productivity we've done. We've pulled out 480 changes into the app in the last 12 months.
Yeah.
I say double, I'm exaggerating, but certainly more than a 10% increase in what we've done.
Yeah, that's, I remember having this podcast with Radhika Dutt, who's the author of the book Radical Products. And she's talking about this thing of, okay, everybody's always going at full speed, but they're going in different directions.
Exactly.
The moment you start to align the speed of everybody, you get velocity as a business. And I think that's the whole magic behind it.
I mean, to illustrate, again, this is off the top of my head, but this would be the kind of difference that last year, 2 years ago, we might be doing one new product thing a month. And now practically every week we have a customer-facing feature or product change.
Wow. Yeah.
So that's a 4x difference. But not always. As I said, we've been consumed by pricing at the moment. But then changing the pricing has been designed to make it cheaper for people to use You Can Book Me at a lower cost level. So it's been all for the sake of adding more value. And for us to do that, we had to model all of our features. So we've done quite a lot of consequential work in that. But absolutely, when everybody understands we're doing pricing to make it cheaper for people so that they get more value because these are all the features that they like, which we've been building and we're going to build more. Everybody is aligned to that mission.
That is so contradicting to what I typically see in the market, you know, specifically also the companies that are led by private equity who are just in there to squeeze more profit out of the business. Doing exactly the opposite. So, and I think it's what I also like about it. And the question at the end is, can you give an anecdote about the pricing actually is not disconnected from other things in the business. People always think, okay, do the pricing. But the pricing influences product architecture and a lot more around it. So can you explain that? Like what drove the pricing?
You have to ask all of your guests how they do it because I don't know the answer.
Okay.
How people do it. We had a very simple pricing system before, which was price per calendar.
Okay.
And it worked for a while. It basically, everything you do works until it doesn't work. So we changed our pricing in 2016. So we'd already done a consequential change to our pricing model. And then we realized it just didn't work for people trying to pay us $10, $20 a month. They weren't getting enough value because they weren't being able to connect to enough calendars that they wanted. So we've changed it. But in order for us to change it, we've modeled all the features inside You Can Book Me. Now, I don't know whether people build software the last couple of years, that happens normally, whether everybody's features are modeled. But it turns out to be really quite complicated to model all your features and then decide provisioning, essentially, what's in, what's out, what plan are you offering? and how to do it. And there's plenty of people that will say, let's optimize pricing or create new pricing plans or whatever. But nobody ever talks about the back end architecture of it. And we've, I mean, it's just been really hard. Like, it's not, we've got really good people working on it. We've been modeling it. Some fantastic architects and engineers working on it. But it's taken us basically 8 months to do it. We started with the free plan. We started with modeling the features. Then we put out a new free plan. Then we started modeling the tiers.
Yeah.
And it's really hard. So yes, anybody that you know, you interview is an expert, because it's not about it. And the good thing that we did was that we modeled the pricing that people would have paid based on their feature sets that they were using. So we were able to see that when we changed the pricing, who would be benefiting from our existing customer base. And we could see the people that we want to benefit would definitely be benefiting.
Yeah.
So it was a really good correlation. So we did an enormous amount of data analysis on this. I should probably even do a conference talk on it.
Yeah.
Because I know, you know, there's so many questions that I would now have for any software founder thinking about pricing and how they're going to do it. Maybe it's not so complicated for a lot of companies because they're doing enterprise pricing. So you said you were in enterprise world. So, you know, if you've only got a handful of customers and they're all paying you thousands of pounds, how you model the features doesn't really matter. But what we're doing is very low level self-service freemium. Mm. So it's kind of, it really matters. Do you want the extra customization or not? Yeah. You know, and if you want it, then you need to go up to the next level. It's that is what we're talking about.
Exactly. Well, I mean, that's, I think, a good one for a separate podcast, a whole topic around that one. But I'm definitely going to ping a couple of customers around it, because I'm now getting curious as well. Because, I mean, I struggled with it in the past as well. Let me see. You like, okay, looking at the time, one question around segmentation that goes back to, okay, it's not a horizontal product. What you're doing is very specific and creates possibly more value to one person than to another person for different reasons.
Exactly, yeah.
What has been a fundamental choice that you made to your segmentation that gave you success?
I'm going to answer more generalized, because in a way, we've actually gone back to our original segmentation of small businesses. So we started with small businesses and education, and then we ended up doing an awful lot for software companies and teams, and we still do, and it's still very good. It's a very popular tool for sales teams and customer success teams. But there's a bit of product management there on the team side that we decided not to prioritize in 2024. Instead, just change the pricing to match the small businesses instead. But I think more generally what I would say is it's so easy to build features, and feature bloat is real. And it's real that, for example, you can say, let's be really generous about our free tool and have loads of features in the free tool. All you're doing is confusing free users who need a really simple tool, and they don't want to think, because they're not paying for the software. So they just literally want it to work. So if you have a problem that your free users can't contact support, it means that your free tool is more complicated than it needs to be. So for me, the biggest challenge has always been feature bloat, UX, support, confusion, and optimizing value on a tool like YouCanBookMe. And I mean, to an extent, we've got it right, because, as I said, we're still standing.
Well, pretty impressive, by the way, over a million accounts.
Those are free accounts, so I should say they're not all paying us. But yeah, no, we've got like 1.3 million accounts on YouCanBookMe, but they are all like people who just create accounts all the time on YouCanBookMe. But I think that if you this lesson that we've only recently learned about our ICPs is making a really big difference about saying this is the feature set for them. And I think that the danger of this, people just saying, oh, if you build it, I will come, is real. And founders really have to, it's really hard. We, even though I know that's the lesson, we continually build things hoping that they're speculatively going to serve more than the one person who asked for it. I'm desperately trying to get the whole company focused on the data-driven decisions for building features rather than just, this sounds like a good idea, let's do it.
Exactly. Okay. Last question then. Based on the 12 years of bootstrapping the company so far, what does it do and what is it don't that you'd like to share with aspiring tech entrepreneurs?
Well, they could obviously be the inverse of the same piece of advice.
Of course.
Well, I don't know. You've probably done your research. I have produced a bootstrapping manual, which you can get by going to youcanbook.me/manual. It's very easy. You fill out a form and you get my ebook, which I wrote last summer. It's every word is written by me. So if you really want my advice for founders, I've written it all in that manual. But in it, I think what I try to do with that manual is try to capture my and Keith's journey as founders and try to explain why we made the decisions that we made.
Yeah.
And then I've got in the manual lists of checklists where you can test yourself against similar questions like, what are your priorities? Or how risk averse are you? Or what do you want? What's your goal? Because any advice I would have is all based around my goals, whereas the first lesson for any founder is to know what it is that they want. And consequently, conversely, to know what it is that they don't want. So if you said, what would you not do? For example, in my case, I would not mortgage my house to use the money to invest in my business. You know, it's a sort of basic risk management of my personal finances that I wouldn't do. Plenty of founders will do that. Plenty of founders will raise their own private money to invest in their business. It's entirely because they know what their risk appetite is and they know what they want and what their goal is.
Yeah.
And so for me, the number one piece of advice to the founder, to any founder or business owner, is know what you want, work out what you want. And that's hard. It's not obvious. And so I wrote my bootstrapping manual specifically for people to read through my story and go, okay, well, what would I think about in that situation? Or what would I do? And the more close people are aligned to their goals, then they're closer to success. So even if it is, do you know what? I don't want a 20-year software project. I don't even need a software project to last more than 5 years. I don't want to scrape around borrowing money. I just want VC funding because I'm in my 20s. I'll get a job that'll pay me probably $80,000, $90,000, $100,000 a year. I get to employ people, have an enormous amount of experience, spend essentially other people's money, try to get the whole thing off the ground, have an absolute blast. And if it doesn't work out by the time I'm 30, I'm cool with that. You know, that is legitimate. That's valid. It's other people's founder experiences shouldn't be the defining story for you, but you have to know what it is that you want, because otherwise you will be swayed by what other people want. And that's the only thing I would say don't do. Don't end up just delivering somebody else's business plan, because that's a bit soulless. I think if you're going to own your own business and run your own business and you're going to be the boss, I think it has to serve you first, however you define that.
Exactly. Well said. Well, where can people go to find out more about You Can Book Me or to say hi to you?
I'm on LinkedIn. I'm on LinkedIn almost every day. I love LinkedIn. So do say hi. My DMs are open. You can go to You Can Book Me, youcanbook.me. You can create an account. It's free. I hope you enjoy using the tool, booking people, etc. I'm kind of on the other socials, but I'm not really. I'm basically on LinkedIn.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Bridget, for sharing a good part of the story. I could have talked to you for a couple of more hours, for sure. I'm going to follow you on the rest of the journey. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for asking me.
Yeah, it was a pleasure as well for me. Thanks. And this ends my conversation with Bridget. And I hope you enjoyed it. And if so, please leave a review on iTunes. And if it inspired you, please share it with other tech entrepreneurs on the mission that you have in your network. Other than that, thank you for tuning into this podcast. I had the honor to speak to Bridget Harris, co-founder and CEO of You Can Book Me. As said, the goal that I have in this podcast is twofold. Firstly, to inspire new forms of value creation by sharing compelling ideas and stories about the potential we can unlock when technology and people blend in the right way. And secondly, share experiences from tech entrepreneurs like you about what is required to create a remarkable software business and how to overcome the roadblocks to do so.
Before I close, I have two more comments to make. If you know other tech entrepreneurs on a mission that have a story worth sharing, please send me an email at ton.dobby@valueinspiration.com. Building the momentum all starts with revealing the ideas, and that starts with you. And if you want to know more about my book, or you're interested in joining the Remarkable Effect tribe, please visit my website at www.valueinspiration.com. Thanks for tuning in. And you could do me a big favor by rating the podcast on iTunes or provide me with your feedback directly. I'll see you shortly on a new episode.